Well, good morning. Hope y'all are doing well. It's kind of weird, you know, I kind of get used to people being in certain spots, and I don't know what happened this morning, but a bunch of y'all scrambled. Kind of looking around, Wilkins are sitting over here, second hour, what's that all about? Some people ask me from time to time, do you really know who's out there? Oh yeah, I know. I just got back from North Carolina. My son is going to be a Tar Heel next year, so we went up to orientation, found out what a Tar Heel is. It's actually looks like a little foot with a little stain on the heel part. Kind of strange. You know, kind of been singing in my mind, I'm going to Carolina. Understand that God decided to paint the sky Carolina blue. So anybody that loves blue skies, it's because University of North Carolina taught God into painting the sky their mascot color. I mean, I heard all kinds of weird stuff, but one of the best things I heard was Brady Trawick's sermon when I got back, listened to that, and it was really good. Really excited that God is giving us guys to plant churches in this city that are quality individuals, and we're just excited about his church plant coming up in the fall. And I'm glad you guys had a chance to hear him last week. How many of you are familiar with the book or the DVD, The Secret? A couple of you? A few of you have seen it? Well, if you haven't seen it or you haven't talked to somebody who's seen it or read it, you probably will. 5.25 million copies have been sold since it was published in November. There's a CD or DVD of the whole concept, and it's pretty popular right now. A lot of talk shows, self-help people are really promoting it, and it's all based on this concept that there's a universal immutable law in the universe called the law of attraction. And here's how it works, that whatever you focus on and whatever you think about and whatever you meditate on, it will eventually come to you. And so, like, you want financial success, you want to get the girl, romantic success, you want career success, or whatever you want. If you will concentrate on it and focus on it long enough, there's this law in the universe that will force it to come to you. Now, there are lots and lots of things I could say at this moment. But a friend of mine, John Burks, offered just one example of the reason why this is not true. Teenage boys. Now, if the law of attraction was true, every teenage boy would have a supermodel on each arm. Because we all know that teenage boys spend a lot of time thinking about, visualizing, and concentrating on beautiful girls. And Jessica Alba would be on every teenage boy's arm if this was true. Actually, I was pretty pleased with the Ladies' Home Journal. They did a little one-pager on this, and they interviewed four guys, scientists, psychologists, people that do a lot of thinking, and they talked about the reasons why the law of attraction isn't true. But it's really popular, and everybody likes secrets, and everybody likes to be in the know, and certainly everybody likes to be able to feel like they can control the universe, and that's what this is all about. Now, the book itself is based on a principle, and it sells based on a principle, and that is that we are universally dissatisfied with our current lives. Living in the land of plenty, living in the richest place in the world, the United States, let's face it, we live in a culture of people who are dissatisfied. We want more. We want it now. We want it bigger. We want it better. We want stuff. People in the United States want it. People in Austin want it. People at Hill Country Bible Church want it. We live in a world of dissatisfaction, and that's why things like The Secret really sell, because if you can find a way to get what you want, and you're dissatisfied with where you are, I mean, that works really well. It works really well. This morning, I want us to look at the secret that the Apostle Paul learned, and I think you'll see that there's a striking difference between that secret and the one that's being promoted. And if you'll turn your Bibles to Philippians chapter 4, we're 2 weeks away from wrapping up our series on the book of Philippians. We've had a blast studying this book where Paul likens the Christian life to a race. And so Paul tells us today, I run with the secret. And here's what he says. Starting in verse 10 of Philippians chapter 4, he says, I greatly rejoice in the Lord that at last you have renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you've been concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I'm not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. Oh, okay, now we understand what the topic is. The topic is money. Paul is saying this. He's saying, you know, I know you guys have been concerned about me, and you've wanted to show it, but you haven't really had a chance to show it, but now you've sent money to me to demonstrate your concern. And now that I've received your money, I want to tell you thank you, but I also want to tell you something else. And this is Paul's first principle. He tells us the secret is it's not about the money. It's not about the money. Now, a lot of us are buying into the idea that it really is about the money. Or maybe it's not about the actual cold hard cash, but it's what the money can buy. You know, money isn't everything, but everything I want costs money. It's not about the money. And let me just share with you a couple lies that I think we have a tendency to buy into. Most of us would not admit that we are just cold, hard, materialistic people. Most of us would not say that, you know, my goal in life is to, you know, be the next Bill Gates. Even though some of you are thinking, if that was to come my way, I wouldn't sneeze at that. I'd love to have that happen. You got a lottery ticket, that's a winning ticket, pass it along, I'll take it. But most of us wouldn't come right out and say that materialism or the acquisition of things is what we live for. But there are some lies that I think we buy into. The first lie is this. I would be content with just a little bit more than I have. I would be content with just a little bit more than I have. If I had just a little bit more than what I have right now, I think that would be enough. I think I'd be content. And a lot of us buy into that. Here's the truth. The truth is that a constant desire for more makes me dissatisfied with what I currently have. A constant desire for more actually creates a dissatisfaction. It creates a dissatisfaction by thinking if I could just get a little bit more, the tendency is to not value what I currently have. And if I'm not happy or satisfied with what I have, then where am I? I'm dissatisfied, right? I'm unhappy. I'm not content. I'm dissatisfied. My life is diminished. So the constant desire for acquisition creates a dissatisfaction. It makes my life feel less valuable and less worthy of living. How can I be satisfied with the bomb that I'm driving now? Oh, well, wait a minute. The bomb's positive now, isn't it? How can I be satisfied with the clunker that I'm driving now when the person next to me is driving that two-seater sports car that I've always wanted? And that's what I really want. Means what I have, I don't want. The second principle, or the second lie, that I think we believe is a little bit more subtle. It's a little bit more kind of built on some feelings. All of us know that the acquisition of things does give us a sense of a rush. You know, when you really want something, and you've been thinking about it for a long time, and you kind of get excited about it, and then you're going to get it now. You're moving in the direction of the purchase. And so you're moving toward buying it. And there's kind of a rush from being able to buy something and being able to get what it is, whether it's a new car or whether it's upgrading your house or whether it's a new outfit. whatever it is, you know, there's kind of this feeling, and when you acquire it and bring it home and it's yours, and you get to play with it or whatever it is, there's this feeling of happiness, satisfaction. And depending on the size of it and whether you have it and nobody else does or whatever, oftentimes that will last for a period of time, sometimes longer or sometimes shorter. So here's the trap. Because it feels good, there's some kind of a purchaser's high. We begin to believe the second lie, and that is that if I can continually string together a buyer's high after buyer's high after buyer's high, then I'm going to always be happy. Then I'm always going to be happy. So if I can just keep a little bit more coming in and I can just keep getting a little bit more of these highs, you know, once a month, once a year, twice a year, every week, then I'm going to always be happy because I'll feel the rush. And one way to tell whether you fit into that category is when you get bored or depressed, do you tend to go buy? You tend to go buy to kind of pick your mood up. You know, some people drink when they get depressed. Some people shop when they get depressed. You kind of pick your mood up. Here's the truth, and here's why that concept is so dangerous. The truth is that each buyer's high decreases my satisfaction by increasing my appetite. Each buyer's high decreases my satisfaction by increasing my appetite. In other words, every time I feel that thrill, and then it wears off, I now have a larger capacity for needing something bigger for a bigger thrill. You ever been driving home from Schlitterbahn with your kids in the car and have one of them say, "I'm bored. I'm bored." Well, yeah, car ride compared to riding down the rapids at Schlitterbahn, yeah, it's going to be boring. What happened? Man, now that I really know what fun is, I'll never be the same. I got to have Schlitterbahn every day. How long will that last? Until, hey, Dad, Disney World? I mean, let's face it. Condo on Lake Travis? After you stayed in the Bali or the Tahiti or Bali, the Hyatt in Tahiti or Bali? I mean, are you going to go back to the condo on Lake Travis? Are you going to be happy with that again? What happened? When you found out what Hawaii really looked like, you think swimming in the river is going to be fun? You just got a bigger appetite, which makes it harder to satisfy you. And all this is to say that we tend to believe that it's about the money. That if we could just get more, if we could just do more, if we could just have more, experience more, that we would eventually find satisfaction. And when you focus on the money, what you're going to find is that you will be more dissatisfied than satisfied. You will be less happy than the other way that Paul lays out for us in this passage. He tells us there's a secret that we need to learn, and the secret he learned, and the secret that we need to learn is the secret that it's all about being content. It's all about contentment. That's the real deal. That's the real satisfaction. It comes from contentment. He gives us in this passage four principles about contentment, ways to develop contentment and how to live that on your life. And the four principles in this passage, first of all, is that contentment is a state of the heart. Contentment is a state of the heart. Look at what he says. He says, "I greatly rejoice in the Lord that at last you have renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you had been concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it." Now, I'm not saying this because I am in need. In other words, it's not about the money. That's not why I'm saying this. "For I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or want. I can do everything through him who gives me strength." Contentment is a state of the heart. The word contentment means to be self-sufficient. Self-sufficient. Now, it's not talking about financially self-sufficient. It's talking about being emotionally self-sufficient. It's talking about being personally self-sufficient. In other words, what it's saying is that there's a quality of the heart that you can develop that makes you satisfied with your life regardless of the external circumstances. Most of us live in a world where if the things around us are going well, we feel good. If the things around us are going poorly, we feel bad. That means when it comes to money, when things are going up, we're feeling good. When things are going down, we're feeling bad. That's not contentment. Contentment is developing this internal self-sufficiency where I can find satisfaction in my life regardless of what's going on around me. And we'll talk in a few minutes about where the source of that self-sufficiency actually comes from. What we need to do is we need to recognize that there is the ability to develop an inner quality that focuses on growing internally. And it doesn't have anything to do with my circumstances. But so many of us spend so much time focusing on how our circumstances are going that we never even work on this. We never even think about this quality, never work on developing it. Second principle in this passage is that contentment is forged in the fires of life. Contentment is forged in the fires of life. Notice what Paul says. He says, listen, I know what it is to have plenty, and I know what it is to be in need. He says, I know what it is to go well-fed, and I know what it is to go hungry. What's Paul telling us? Paul's telling us that God has taught him through the ups and downs of his financial experience that it's not about the money. Paul lived through times when he was hungry, hard times. And you know what he discovered there? God met him and God showed him that life doesn't consist in money. He could be happy. You know, he could be happy. When you find out that the people around you, that the world you live in, the circumstances around you, they don't control your happiness, that God does that. And when Paul had financial resources, lots, he realized, you know, it wasn't the things that I had that made me happy. And through both of those experiences of life, God taught him that it is not about stuff. That doesn't bring quality into your life. That doesn't bring meaning into your life. That doesn't bring satisfaction into your life. Every once in a while, I'll run into somebody who'll say, yeah, you know, I remember the old days when we were poor. You know, those were some good times back then, really hard, you know. We had to struggle and struggle. We didn't have two nickels to rub together, but we had each other, and we got by, and we worked hard, and we put a lot of effort into it, and we've achieved. And, you know, most of what I am as a man came from those hard times. And by golly, I'm never going to let my kids go through that. What do you mean? If life grew through difficulty, if you grew through hardship, why would you keep people away from that? You see, God meets us in those circumstances. And for those who are willing to listen and learn from God, you know what you find out? You find out when you only have one nickel and there's nothing to rub it against, you can still enjoy life and be happy. You can find relationships and enjoyment and love, meaning and purpose, and make a contribution. And you know what? When you've got so much that you dread April 15th, because you just can't believe you're going to be giving that much money to the federal government, you can still be happy. You can still be satisfied because it's not about the money. And so we have to allow God to teach us through the circumstances in our life what it means to be content. It's forged through those circumstances. If you're going through a hard time right now, financial rug's been pulled out from under you, you feel like you're on a free fall financially, you're thinking, I'm never going to be happy until I get some solid ground underneath me, I think you're missing the point. It's not the money that's going to keep you stable when the ground around you is shaking. This is a time to learn. And if you're on an uphill climb financially, be careful to really guard your heart. Because on that uphill climb, you can think, oh, it's all about, I'm happy because of the money. and that's going to wear off. You'll find it out. The third principle is that contentment is critical for Christian faith. Contentment is critical for Christian faith. Now, I want you to turn over to 1 Timothy chapter 6. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, which is kind of a parallel passage, Paul lays out something that every one of us need to pay attention to, because this is so important that you get it. There is a huge danger in not learning the secret of contentment. In fact, Paul puts it in very, very straightforward graphic terms. Look at what he says in verse 6. He says, "For godliness with contentment is great gain." Now, that's basically what he's been telling us, that Christ plus contentment in Philippians 4, or here he uses the term godliness plus contentment, that's a 1-2 punch that'll make your life worthwhile. The alternative to that is risky. He goes on to say, "Godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world and we can take nothing out of it, but if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that." What did Jesus say? Pray like this: "Give us this day our" what? "Our daily bread." Man, if I got food on my back, I got something to keep the rain off my head, clothes on my back, food in my mouth, and at least a big umbrella. You know, we live in Austin, so, you know, it's mostly nice all the time. Yeah, these young guys are really interesting. Now, let me tell a little story on Denny. You guys know Denny, our UT pastor? He just had a baby yesterday, or no, the day before yesterday, and he cried through the whole thing. Like, while his wife was in labor, hurting, he was bawling. Anyway, we were out in San Diego for a conference, and he said, "If I was ever going to be homeless, I'd do it in San Diego." Where does that come from? Our Pflugerville pastor, Danny Box, and I were in the car. We said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, I've given a lot of thought to this." Hey, if you've got a meal, you've got a shirt on your back, and you've got shelter over your head, that is the baseline starting point for a good day, okay? That's a good day. Everything on top of that is gravy. But what if it's not for you? What if the gravy becomes essential for you to be happy? Here's what Paul says in this passage. He warns us. He goes on to say, "People who want to get rich," that is a desire to acquire, people who want to get rich fall into what? "Fall into temptation and a trap, and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction." That's a strong warning. People who are not satisfied with where they are and feel the strong need to acquire money or acquire what money can buy as the passion and priority of their life, they've set themselves up for problems. He says, you've set yourself up for temptation. You're going to be tempted to do things that other people wouldn't do. Now, there's ethical things like buying or lying and stealing and cheating. There's relational things like ignoring valuable relationships, ignoring family members, stepping on people's shoulders to try to get where you're going. There are all kinds of temptations. There are also traps that people get themselves into. Debt's an example of that. Can't pay my bills, and now I'm stressed out. Traps that are out there for people like that. And he says, you plunge yourself into desires that can actually destroy you. I've got some good friends whose marriage broke up over this particular issue. Dissatisfaction with where they were at financially led them in a direction. These people are godly people in ministry. And this took over, and it broke up their home. 3 kids. Growing up in a broken home. And money was a driving issue behind this. Never think it's going to take you there, but sometimes it does. He goes on to say, For the love of money, not money itself, money's never the issue, remember? The love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. The image there, pierced themselves with many griefs, is it's like stabbing yourself. And the desire to acquire and the need to get, just stabbing yourself through with pain, contentment, satisfaction. It's not about the money. So there's a warning, even for Christians who fall into this trap. Finally, the fourth principle here is that contentment is sourced in Christ. Contentment is sourced in Christ. In Philippians 4:13, Paul says, I can do everything through him who gives me strength. I can do everything. The source of what my life consists of, whether I'm in prison, which is where Paul is when he's writing this, I can do everything through him. I can thrive in any environment under any circumstances with my relationship with Christ, because Christ is with me. He gives me meaning. He takes me in a direction that gives me the ability in any and every situation to trust in him. He's the source. He's the source. Billy Graham, in his book, Just As I Am, tells a story of two different men. He'd traveled to a Caribbean island there to be the guest of a couple different men, and one of the men was a very wealthy man, and a very wealthy man, 75 years old, was just sharing about his life with Billy Graham. And at one point in the conversation, here's what he said. He said, I am the most miserable man in the world, he said. Out there's my yacht. I can go anywhere I want to. I have my private plane, my helicopter. I have everything I want to make me happy, yet I am as miserable as hell. Billy Graham sat there with this man, just couldn't get his arms around that. And finally he came back and tried to talk to this man about his relationship with Christ. Later on the same day, they went back to the place where they were staying, and another 75-year-old man shows up. This man was the pastor of a little dinky church on the island. His wife had died a number of years before. He didn't really have any money. He was taking care of two sisters who were very ill. And here's what he said. As they were talking, this man, full of enthusiasm and love for Christ and others, said, I don't have 2 pounds to my name, he said with a smile, but I'm the happiest man on this island. Graham concludes by asking the question, what's the difference between these two men? It's not about the money. It's about a relationship with Jesus Christ. We find contentment comes from Jesus Christ. Now, if I were to sit down and interact with each of you, I know that in the material world we live in, all of us have struggled at some level, at some point in time, with this particular issue. And one couple that in our church that's really struggled with this and have been working through it are David and Allison Owen. And I've asked them to come up and just share a little bit of their story, kind of the struggle that they've been through and what they've learned through that process. Allison, David, thank y'all. Appreciate your willingness to share. Now, this has been a great journey for you guys, and so kind of get me started. Where did you guys find yourself at in life, and what was going on there?
Well, we definitely believed the lies that you talked about. When we got out of college, we had student loan debt, but we had two incomes, and everything was easy, so we thought it would just continue that. We looked around and saw people and things that we wanted to emulate, we wanted to have. And we really started our lives down a path of trying to get that next thing that was going to fulfill our lives. And so we basically put ourselves in a lot of debt that put a lot of stress on our marriage and really kept us from defining that contentment that you talked about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, in your particular job made that even more difficult, didn't it?
Yes, I'm on commission, which means there's some really good times, really high times, and some awfully low times. And one of the things that we did as part of this trap was we used credit and debt to keep us up during the low times and hoping that the high times would be able to pay off all our mistakes. Mm-hmm. And it became a rat race that we just couldn't get out of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, Allison, in the middle of all that, what was your perspective?
I try to ignore it all.
Okay.
I just kind of let David take care of that part of our marriage, and I didn't have any accountability for it. I didn't do a very good job of being responsible mm-hmm. during that time of our marriage.
Mm-hmm. And what were you feeling inside?
Just really empty. I mean, even though we were Christians, I just chose to think about a lot of other parts of our lives mm-hmm. instead of thinking about, you know, our responsibility as adults and handling our financial affairs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, recreation.
We bought a house, and you know everything that comes along with that, and we just kind of did whatever.
Right.
You know, we just didn't really put that very high on the priority list at mm-hmm. the time.
So you're worrying about the finances because you're feeling it, you're looking at it, you're kind of stressing, and you're ignoring it. You guys are just kind of rocking along. Well, how did you come to the decision that something needed to change, and what did that look like?
Well, you know, you definitely look within, and you start to see that there's too much pride involved in that you're trying to do it all yourself. And through our real life group, we went through the Treasure Principles, the Randy Alcorn book, and it really showed us that God did have a plan for our finances and the resources that He gives us,
mm-hmm.
And it really provided a heart change for us. And through that, we started looking for what's next. What can we do to help improve that part of our lives? And we talked with Doug James, and he pointed us to a new ministry that the church was starting, Financial Peace University. And we went through that, and it really changed everything. It changed mm-hmm. the way we looked at our finances, the way we communicated, the way we put material possessions before other things in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
It helped us learn how to spend, and what to spend, what not to spend, how to save, how to really put that as a priority. But the biggest thing it taught us is how to give
mm.
and how to make that the priority in our lives and not so much what we needed next to keep us happy. And once we did that, it really took that selfish part of us. Now, we still struggle with that part, but the fact that we have a greater goal and a plan in our lives on how to get through this, we definitely are much more focused on God than we were before.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an awesome transformation. And, you know, as you started working through those principles in your mind, and you guys started working through that together, you guys had some relational things that you had to work on too. So tell me your experience in going through this change.
Well, even though that was the biggest struggle for us during our marriage, I feel like we grew closer together than we'd ever been before, because I feel like I woke up in a lot mm-hmm. of ways to that part of our marriage, and I started gaining accountability and responsibility as a wife, as a mother, just as a person. And we just really put Christ in the center of our marriage, and we grew closer together than we ever have before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In comparison to some of the other things you guys have experienced in life, how would you gear this process for you?
Oh, we're closer now than we've ever been before. I mean, it was as life-changing as our wedding day or the birth of our children or anything. It was a very transforming experience for me.
That's really good. That's really good. Well, so you guys have been through this. It's drawn you closer together. You feel more stability in your lives. Wrap it up for me. I mean, what would you say is the long-term outcome of this?
Well, you know, we still struggle with the day-to-day lives and everything that's pulling it at our relationship and our finances. And we have kids now, and that adds a whole new dynamic to it. But several months ago, you did the study on the Beatitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ones that had the most impact on me was the one that said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. And it really made me realize that in the past, we've always tried to fill that need or that void in our lives with material things, with possessions, with comforts.
Mm-hmm.
And really, once we kind of turned that corner and started looking at God to fill that and really going after that righteousness, it changed the way we feel about each other, the way we feel about God, and it's made everything easier from the sense that we really know where we're grounded now.
That's really good, David. So God really did teach you guys the secret of contentment, that you can do all things through Jesus Christ, who gives you his strength.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Well, thank you all for being willing to come and share with us and what God's done in your life. Really appreciate it. Well, as we wrap up today, you may be feeling like, well, that's where I was, or that's where I am, or I don't even know if I want to even go there, because you know, that would be such a traumatic thing for me to start thinking about thinking differently. But as you wrestle with the issue of contentment, let me give you just 4 points of application that you can embrace and do whatever you want to with them, and hopefully these will really help you take the next step in your own personal growth. The first one is, make Christ the focus of your affection. Make Christ the focus of your affection. If your affection, what you love, is experience, it's acquisition, it's enjoyment, if that's what you love, you're going to be dissatisfied with your life. I mean, let's be honest. Does your life consist in a love for the metal and plastic and cloth that make up an automobile? Is that going to satisfy your soul? Is your soul going to be satisfied by the bricks and mortar and carpeting and shingles that make up a house? Is that really something that you will be able to say, my soul is satisfied by that? By a new piece of material to put on your body? I give my life to that. That's what's really going to make me happy. All of us know deep down inside that our soul hungers for something that's so much more than that. You know what it hungers for? It hungers for a relationship with its creator, Jesus Christ. And the more passionately you pursue that relationship with him, the more you're going to find satisfaction for your soul. It's never going to be found in simply experiences and things. It never will be. You're bigger than that. Your soul is bigger than that. If you've never placed your faith and trust in Jesus Christ to become a Christ follower, I mean, what else do you have? What else do you have? And I would challenge you. We would love to have the opportunity to help you develop that relationship and grow in him. At the conclusion of our service, we're going to have some folks down front who would love to have a chance to just talk to you for a few minutes about how you can begin to become a Christ follower and to follow hard after him. Second application is, replace I want, need, you fill in the blank, with I'm thankful for, you fill in the blank. When you're thinking, well, what I want, what I need, if you'll just stop right there at that moment, think about what you have and be thankful for it, that will change your whole outlook. Think how much better the car ride home from Schlitterbahn would be if your kid leaned forward and rather than saying, I'm bored, said, man, this has been a great day. I had a blast with you, Mom. I had a blast with you, Dad. We rode the rapids together and we ate those greasy things that they drop in the batter and put that powdered sugar all over them. And we had a blast. Now, not only would that make your life better, but think how much better your child's life would be if rather than thinking, I'm bored, they could be thankful for what they've experienced. Next time you're driving down the road in that old clunker, and you pull up next to that sports car and you're thinking, oh man, that's what I want. Implication, I hate this thing. You start thinking to yourself, you know, he's going to have to wash that thing on the weekend. I'm not washing this. People can see the scratches on it when the dirt comes off. When we say, I'm thankful for what I have, rather than I want, I need, I want, I need. Third one, this is real practical, and that is to stop torturing yourself or stop torturing your heart with stuff. Stop torturing your heart with stuff. If I was to tell you today, hey, you know, I'm going to start eating healthy. And then I went out and bought, you know, a big, huge poster-sized picture of a Cheesecake Factory chocolate decadent dessert and stuck it in my workspace. You'd say, what are you thinking? Like, that's just going to kill you every time you look at that. You're going to want something that you shouldn't eat. We do that all the time. You go to the mailbox and you open it up and you pull out 12 catalogs and you bring them back and you start flipping through them. Look at all the stuff I want. Oh, I'm looking for good deals. Right. Yeah, right. You know, the Parade of Homes tour, the boat show on the weekends. We spend a lot of time recreationally torturing ourselves by going out and investing lots of time looking at what we could have, we might have, we will have. If you're bored and you don't have anything to do besides go shopping, now if you need to buy, you need to buy. But if you're going shopping just to take your mind off your boredom, you can come work in my yard. Just kidding. There are lots of things to do. Call a friend. Have a cup of coffee. Visit. Go build a house with Habitat for Humanity so that at least somebody else in this world can have a roof over their head. There are myriads of things to do besides spend your life looking at stuff that just tortures your satisfaction. Finally, seek support and encouragement from others. Seek support and encouragement from others. The journey toward contentment, the journey toward this kind of understanding is a difficult journey, and there are lots of resources out there and people out there that would love to help you. In fact, if you'll pull out your bulletin, there is a whole list of things that we offer right here just to help you in this process. From individual counseling to seminars, we've got a couple different programs like Financial Peace University and Crown Financial Ministry. We even have something for teenagers to help them in their process of life. So don't wait, particularly if you got a married couple that are at each other's throat, or maybe a father and son that are at each other's throat. Don't wait. Get involved in something that can help you find true contentment. Paul said this. He said, I've learned the secret of being content in every situation. When I don't have enough food, or when I can eat like a king. And that secret is that I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. Let's bow our heads for prayer. Father in heaven, we thank you that there is something that is bigger and grander and more noble to live for, something that can truly satisfy our souls. And that something is your Son, Jesus Christ. Father, I pray for each person here that they would recognize that whether things are going well or things are going poorly financially, that we could still say, blessed be your name. Blessed be your name, because our hope is in you. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.